What I do is I study people at work. I focus on collaboration and teamwork. I've been studying that for a long time. And obviously, COVID dramatically affected the way people are collaborating and doing their work. My name is Jeff Polzer. I'm a professor in the Organizational Behavior Department at Harvard Business School. And my co-authors and I got together and decided to try to gain some insight into whether the patterns have changed. You know, we hear lots of anecdotes, but have things really changed at a large scale? And if so, in what ways? And that motivated us to conduct a study.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. In this program, while our work environments changed literally overnight, the impact of lockdowns on the nature of work is likely to last well beyond the pandemic. In a study recently published by the National Bureau of Economic Research, scholars from Harvard and Stern Business Schools looked at the ongoing challenges for organizations and workers struggling to adapt and perform amid the global pandemic. Jeff Polzer is a co-author of the study. So people are complaining about spending their days in Zoom calls now. Are they, in fact, spending more time in meetings?
What we found across over 3 million people across 16 cities in over 20,000 firms, so that's the scale we're talking about, in aggregate, people are, on average, having more meetings per day. But these meetings are shorter, again, on average. And so the net effect of that is that the average amount of time spent in meetings per day has actually declined a little bit across this large sample. And when I say declined, I'm comparing the 8 weeks pre-lockdown in cities that had government-mandated lockdowns to 8 weeks post-lockdown. And one other pattern is that the meetings are also bigger. So you've got this interesting mix of more meetings, bigger meetings, but shorter duration.
So how did you collect the data for this study? I mean, where does the data come from?
We were already collaborating with an information technology service provider that licenses their digital communications platform and solutions to organizations around the world. And this allowed us to jump into this study with COVID data right away because we had already done the work of putting into place the data security measures and the privacy measures legally and in terms of what we wanted to have in place to protect people's data. So we already had access or were able to get access quickly to de-identified aggregated data based on people's digital email and calendar use for this big sample of people. And with that ability to kind of tap into that data, we decided specifically to focus on 16 cities that had very specific lockdown mandates put in place on specific dates. And that allowed us across these 16 cities to identify a period when we could be confident to say, okay, after the lockdown, people really are working from home because they are mandated to do so. And then to specify an 8 week window before the lockdown and an 8 week window after the lockdown to do this comparison.
And so to what extent has the email traffic changed during the pandemic?
Email was interesting in that we absolutely saw a spike, an increase of activity when the lockdowns occurred. And in fact, it's interesting because, you know, we picked this lockdown date to be our focal point, but the increase started before the lockdown occurred, which makes sense. The virus was spreading in these different localities at different times. Emails spiked, both internal emails, sent among people within companies, external emails sent by people in the company to those outside the company. But then they came down about they spiked around the lockdown, the week after the lockdown, even 2 weeks. And then we saw the pattern start to return to the baseline with emails. Meeting activity, on the other hand, has remained different across the whole window of our study, but emails came back to baseline. You can imagine lots of possible reasons, and we don't have access to, you know, what was in these emails. So we speculate, but you can imagine lots of coordination and company-wide announcements about what the plans are and what we're going to do and how we need to change things.
Yeah. So with almost a month or at least over 3 weeks between the earliest lockdown in Milan in early March and then in Washington, D.C., at the end of the month or almost at the end of the month, was there any difference in the way that these lockdowns were managed? You know, did the later lockdowns learn anything from the earlier ones, do you think?
So we haven't formally tested that. My sense is, though, is that even though there is a difference of a little less than a month between our earliest and latest lockdown, there, I think so many firms, and this is just my speculation, but so many firms were focused inwardly on what do we need to do, and individually and collectively, like how are we going to set up our home office and how do we do this?
Yeah.
And the fact that some of these, you know, these different cities were across the globe, with that compressed the timeline, I'm not sure there was time to learn and even to see the results from early lockdowns within firms. The one exception to that would be very interesting to look into, and again, we haven't done this, but to look at global firms that have offices across different countries and cities that were experiencing these lockdowns. Within those firms, one could imagine a real ripple effect of adjusting in different places and trying to learn from that.
Yeah, and so the global aspect of this, are multi-country meetings happening more now? And do you think people are more tolerant of the time zones that they were perhaps pre-lockdown?
We were able to get a measure of multi-country meetings from the data provider, and we did see an increase in the 3 or 4 weeks after the lockdown. But then those multi-country meetings actually declined when you get into weeks 6, 7, and 8 past the lockdown. So you can imagine some of this is driven by global companies who are, again, doing coordination across their locations in different countries. We also heard some anecdotes, and we don't have systematic evidence on this, of where offices in one country that were going through traumatic lockdown activities were handing off work to other countries who are picking up some of the work, you know, to help their colleagues in other countries. In terms of tolerance for different time zones, it's a really interesting question. I think it's part of a more general phenomenon that we're seeing of adaptability to different, not just time zones, but different time situations in people's home offices. So, you know, imagine pre-COVID or in lots of organizations traditionally, there are 9 to 5 work hours, and we can count on people being in the office and being at work during those times. And that's part of the reason that flexible work arrangements or work from home arrangements have been tricky, because if you want flexibility and want to work later, how do people know when you're available and when you're not?
Yeah.
With this really strong norm of a traditional workday. And even across time zones, you could still estimate that, like, well, let's just look at what time zone they're in and what the normal workday is there, and we'll look for the overlap. Or accommodate it if there isn't enough overlap. Then we're really sensitive and we know that we need to adapt. That adaptation, I think, has really taken hold everywhere, even within the same time zone, to say, okay, you know, what's your situation? What's my situation? When are you available? When am I available? Now we need to kind of recalibrate and recoordinate how we're going to get our work done and when we're going to do any kind of collaboration we need to do.
And do you think workdays are, in fact, getting longer?
We have a good proxy of that. It's not perfect, but we measured workday length with the data that we had available to us by looking at the first instance for each person, for the first instance of an email or meeting, the timestamp of that email or meeting, and the last instance each day of a meeting or email. And we simply looked at the length, the number of hours between the first and last email or meeting of the day. And we didn't have the individual data, but we got the aggregate measures of this workday length as, you know, according to that measure. And the workday across over 3 million people, on average, the workday has increased by 48 minutes from those, on average, 8 weeks pre-lockdown to 8 weeks post-lockdown. And then when we look at that on a week-by-week or day-by-day basis, we also see that it didn't simply spike during the lockdown and then come back down. It has stayed higher across the 8 weeks of data that we have after the lockdown. Now, important and immediate caveat that we don't know what people are doing during those hours, between their first and last email or meeting. Right. So we don't know if they're working longer or harder. We just know that the extent of their workday has increased. But then there's a lot of variation around this. You know, imagine that one person is simply working more hours than they were before, and it extends into the evening or the early morning, and doing just more work every day. Other people may, be taking breaks in the middle of the day for meals with their family or to take care of someone who's unhealthy during this pandemic, or for all sorts of other reasons to do some of the normal work that they do in the evening. Maybe they have a colleague who can only work and who can only meet in the evening, so they rearrange their schedule accordingly. We know that the workday has been extended, and anecdotally, at least, for sure, some people are working more hours overall. And others are working more flexibly.
Yeah, and that brings up an important point where, people have different home environments, some more conducive to work than others. Some have very difficult home environments with young children, elderly parents or whatever. Do you think, are people being left out of some of the day-to-day activity that goes on in their companies because of restrictions on their time and their home environments?
I think there's a big risk of people being left out of important organizational decisions and meetings and the like because of challenges in their home environments. In fact, some of my colleagues have done some survey research with scientists, for example, and one of the big variables that came out in terms of affecting the productivity, in this case of research scientists, was the presence of children at home. And obviously during the pandemic, lots of these children are not at school, and so they need to be taken care of. So absolutely, people's home situations, including childcare or care for members of their family, or even their home office setup. You know, we've seen the anecdotes and heard the stories of people working from their closet, or certainly their bedrooms as they try to scramble together some sort of home office.
Yeah.
And by the way, people working from their cars in the parking lot of somewhere that has Wi-Fi. So people are trying to adapt in all kinds of ways. But this is a recipe for people with more challenging home environments being left out, not even intentionally, but being left out potentially of some of the core work activities, especially around collaboration and decision making and information sharing that are occurring through these meetings and other forms of communication.
Do we need to be worrying about that sort of inequality caused by the work environment?
I think the risk is real that inequality across people's home environments could start to affect their progress and their success in their companies, to be sure. It's kind of another dimension that can often layer on to previous sources of inequity. I think there's also, though, some potential good news here. So if we think about pre-pandemic life, it seems like a long time ago, people who wanted more flexible work arrangements or who wanted to work from home, there was some evidence that some of those people were more productive, but the people choosing to do that, some were choosing to do that because they had a great home environment for working and found more distractions at the office. And so you saw increased productivity among that particular sample of people. You saw other people who wanted to work from home because they had all of these responsibilities at home. And a long commute just added to the challenge of the typical day. In that situation, you had a set of people at the office working normal hours, and some people then working at home or anywhere, wherever they were. And that situation could really instill a divide between the people at the office and the people at home. there might be a silver lining these days that when everyone in the company is required to work from home, it normalizes that situation. So think about this, you know, think about those instances where somebody's working from home and we all expect everyone to be very professional and for their, if they're on video, for their background to look very professional. And heaven forbid if, you know, pre-pandemic, if someone's child ran through the background of their office when they were in a work meeting, you know, that was such a big deal.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that now. Yeah.
That has all gone out the window, maybe for the better, to say that, hey, we're all working from home. The idea that we have challenges working from home has now become almost a norm. It's commonplace. People get it. And I think managers get it, that it's not that somebody's choosing to work at home so they can slack off. It's that we're all required to work at home and we're all doing the best we can. And so, you know, I think in a lot of companies anyway, in good companies with good managers, we're seeing lots of accommodations and we're seeing new norms emerge. In the best case, where people trust each other to work hard and communicate about what their challenges are and to help each other. So in some sense, the fact that everybody's at home, I think, has potentially opened people's eyes to the challenges of this type of work and helped companies recalibrate and helped managers recalibrate, not just as one-off situation, but by instituting new collective norms about how we're going to work together.
Yeah, and that brings up an important point, the work-life balance, which is something that we've been hearing about for many years now. Is the line between work and life harder to distinguish now?
I think the line between work and home life has, in many cases, been obliterated. I mean, it's, you know, if you, you can even start to make fine-grained distinctions between, does somebody have an office space in their home that's separate from the rest of their home, where they can literally go to work in the morning. And maybe the commute is from your, you know, walking from your kitchen up the stairs to your home office. But that's actually, you know, that's better psychologically to have a specific space that you're using for work that's different from the rest of your home life, where you can close the door, you know, and be at work. But even then, you know, the psychologically, the idea of being at work, to the extent that we associate that with a place, that allows us to then be at other places that are not at work and helps us disconnect. So there's real risk here that as much as people have been really stepping up and being productive and even feeling energized by this new these new challenges and demands, as this drags on, there's a real risk of burnout, especially with the new school year starting, if kids aren't going back to school, which, you know, the reason we're doing this is to stay healthy. And that's the priority, no doubt. But in terms of being able to stay engaged at work without burning out by always being at work, that's a really big risk right now. Mm.
So if the 9-to-5 thing is a thing of the past, what do you think the long-term impact of that will be? How do you see the nature of work evolving from this experience?
It's interesting to listen to some companies who are saying this remote work experiment has changed our thinking. And we're all, you know, some companies are already announcing that our employees can work remotely forever, while hearing other companies chomping at the bit to get back to the home, you know, to their office and wanting to reopen as soon as the safety protocols can be put in place. So we have a lot of learning to do as we see how these different scenarios play out. But the question for me with a 9-to-5 workday is, why is that important to a company to have in place? And let me paint two different pictures. One is because we're worried about whether our employees are actually working hard. Are they actually at work and being productive? And we like people being in the office because we can monitor them. There's a very different possibility in other companies that the reason 9-to-5 is helpful is because we're doing a lot of joint work. We need to talk to each other. We need to collaborate. And it's easier to do when we know where people are and when they'll be there. So the former monitoring scenario, and maybe it's important to come back to work. And in fact, we've seen an uptick in software applications that allow managers to see what people are doing on their computer as they're working remotely. You know, and you can take that all the way to a dystopian future, you know, where we're shackled to our computers and somebody's monitoring our screen. And I don't mean to paint that for all companies by any means, but but the possibility is real. But on the other hand, you can imagine a scenario with a collaborative company where managers trust their employees to work hard, to say, hey, we need you to produce, and we care less about how you do it or when you do it. But there is a benefit, we understand, to being able to collaborate seamlessly and efficiently. And so let's then arrange ourselves to look for, maybe it's certain days of the week, maybe it's certain hours of the day, when we have a commitment wherever we are to be available, because the work we're doing is so interdependent. I think there are a lot of possibilities to learn from this giant global experiment in working from home. And I think the best companies will learn how to operate and communicate and collaborate in new ways that actually take the best of what's possible working from home or working from anywhere, and combine it with the best of gathering together and being in an office. And through that, make things better, both for the individual employees and their well-being, while still being productive in ways that benefit the company. One of the reasons we wanted to do this large-scale study was because of all the different types of stories we were hearing. For all the stories of overwork and huge challenges at home, there are also stories of people who really love the new arrangements they have and who feel like they're more productive than ever. And by the way, who love the fact that they don't have an hour commute every morning and every night. So trying to take the best of what's happening while really being careful that we're sensitive to people's different home environments and that we're not creating kind of second-class citizens of the people with more challenging home environments, to figure out how we can craft from that a kind of revised organizational culture and a revised set of expectations about how we're able to do our best work individually and collectively and carry forward some of the good parts of what's happening out there.
Harvard Professor Jeffrey Polzer, thanks so much for sharing this important research.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Jeff Polzer is a professor in the Organizational Behavior Department at Harvard Business School. You'll find their study on the impact of COVID-19 on the nature of work at nber.org. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe if you like what you're hearing. And follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.